From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today on the program, we're going to be talking about helping the children in our lives grow into independent, confident, and self-sufficient people. I don't know about you, but when I was a kid back in the 1980s, I had pretty free rein in the neighborhood. I walked to and from school every day. I could bike to a nearby park and play in the forested area around the railroad tracks. I went to the public library, and on Saturday nights, I could go to the local video store and rent Star Trek IV or Top Gun for the 27th time. But for many parents today, that level of freedom seems crazy. How can I be sure my little ones will look both ways before crossing the road? What'll happen if they get hurt? What if they get kidnapped? Last summer, I spoke with two guests who have unique perspectives on these ideas. Lenore Skenazy is the founder of the Free Range Kids Movement. When we spoke, she had just published a new second edition of her book, Free Range Kids: How Parents and Teachers Can Let Go and Let Grow. I also spoke with Christina Hillsburg. She spent the first part of her career as an analyst at the CIA, and along with her husband, Ryan, translated that knowledge into a unique parenting style. Their book is License to Parent: How My Career as a Spy Helped Me Raise Resourceful, Self-Sufficient Kids. Because we taped this conversation, we're not taking calls this hour, but we do love hearing what you thought about the show. Maybe some of what we say will resonate with you. Do please let us know. You can email us at talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. Or talk with us on Twitter in real time, @21stshow. That's @21stshow. Okay, welcome Christina Hillsburg, and welcome back Lenore Skenazy.
Hi, good morning, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you, Brian. I made it here safely.
Glad to hear it. So I want to start with both of your sort of parenting origin stories. Christina, when you met your husband, Ryan, he already had three kids from a previous marriage, and you met them on a date at a pumpkin patch, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
I was taken off guard,
you know, by the long leash that he was giving them in this pumpkin patch. We were in a corn maze. You're meant to be lost in the corn maze. And I was kind of like, well, this is interesting. And then even in the store, you know, he was letting them make purchases on their own in the gift shop. And I was kind of filing these things away. That this seemed really unique to me. And, you know, because I grew up in a lot of the same way that you described, Brian, you know, I was out, you know, on my bike all day long, even after the streetlights came on, you know, going to Subway and going to Blockbuster back when you could rent videos and all of those things, you know. And yet when I became a parent, I envisioned being more of the helicopter variety because I had developed this fear around my kids doing the things that I had done. And, you know, I don't know how that came about, but I was always just kind of an anxious person and had become that way. But it was actually seeing the way that my husband parented using some of the skills that we gained at the CIA that made me reconsider my approach.
And you came to realize that there was sort of a method to his seemingly hands-off attitude, right?
That's right. It was very thought out. And there was a lot of safety, you know, that came with it. You know, he was able to give them that autonomy because he was preparing them with some skills to help them be self-sufficient and well-rounded. It's about giving them the security conscious and awareness of the world, not in a paranoid way, but in a way that, you know, prepares them for whatever comes at them, knowing that the risk of actually some of these things that we find so scary and we hear about so often, knowing that the statistically the chance of those happening are really low. And Lenore talks a lot about that in her book, Free Range Kids, and her Let Grow movement as well. So I'm excited to hear what she has to say to you today.
Yeah. And Lenore, I want to ask you to put a pin on that, and we'll come back to that in a minute. But before that, I want to talk about your origin story as well. I know you've told it a million times about dropping your then 9-year-old son at the Bloomingdale's department store in Manhattan.
Yes.
And letting him navigate his way home, and including the subway. But I want to ask you before that, had you always practiced what you would come to call free range parenting, or did you have sort of a gradual or sudden realization about it?
The only time I realized I even had a parenting philosophy is when I had to defend it after I wrote the column about letting the son ride the subway at age 9. But I had a paper trail because I've been a newspaper columnist for so long. And I went and looked back at old columns I'd written, and there was one like, oh, I took my kids to the children's theater and I let them go to the bathroom by themselves. They were 4 and 6. Or, oh, I let my kids play on the playground in our courtyard. We lived, you know, in a very safe courtyarded building in Manhattan, and they were, I don't know, 5 and 7. And I was actually saying these old columns, like, come and get me, Child Protective Services, here I am. I let my children play in a courtyard where there's more guards than people, you know, and no cars at age 5 and 7. So what I had I'd say all along, and probably the reason I became a reporter, is a real curiosity about other people and a trust in the world, trust in strangers, that that there's a very solid through line. But that's about it. Otherwise, I'm anxious too. I was so happy to hear Christina was anxious too, because people think that I'm like this ballsy badass who's like, oh yeah, my kid's out there with a spear right now and he's coming home with dinner. And it's like, my kid just bought a car and I'm terrified. So it's not that I have nerves of steel. It's that I don't really see an alternative to giving kids some independence, because I can't be with them all the time. And I don't think the world itself is so horrible.
Maybe we should be clear about what it does and does not mean to encourage free range kids, in your view, right? I mean, you put your children mm-hmm. in car seats, you had them wearing bike helmets, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I tell people that at Izzy, the subway rider's 10th birthday, he was 9 when he rode the subway, 10, we had a party with a football, like a kiddie football coach. God forbid they played their own game. And the really fun goodie bag I gave them was not cookies, not candy. It was a mouth guard, you know? And then I sat there in the kitchen with the boiling water, shooing them out, but, you know, getting the mouth guard soft enough to thick, and then taking it out so it'd be like a perfectly well-fit mouth guard. So I would say that, yeah, I love safety. I just don't think the kids need a security detail. That's the thing that's gotten me. It's like not letting them do anything on their own strikes me as unsafe and unsound, but it doesn't mean that I don't love safety.
Yeah. All right. Let me take a moment to reintroduce my guest. If you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Lenore Skenazy, author of Free Range Kids, and Christina Hillsburg, author of License to Parent. And Christina, let's talk about that anxiety, because you and Ryan eventually have 5 children. There were 3 who came to be known as the Bigs that Ryan had, and 2 more you call the Littles. And you write about being really anxious after you give birth to your youngest son and daughter. Can you talk about your journey on that?
That's right. When I gave birth to my son, I experienced anxiety at a new level. You know, I had always been a worrier, but I became, you know, this anxious parent and dealt with postpartum anxiety, which I hadn't really heard a lot about. You hear a lot more about it in the media nowadays, but I think we still have a long way to go. But there are all these companies that prey on the anxious parent as well, right? So when my son was a newborn, I had a sock on his foot that measured his oxygen levels and his heartbeat. So even when he was actually sleeping, which was not very often, I wasn't even sleeping because I was looking at his oxygen levels. I've never looked at oxygen levels before, you know, and I even when he started walking, you know, he was 20 months old when our youngest Gigi was born. And this idea of taking them both to a park and him, you know, he had some language, but not a lot. And he was, you know, on the move. And I had a newborn and I thought, what if I'm distracted with my newborn and someone takes him, right? And so I had this fear and it was almost debilitating at some points. And so I put a GPS tracker under his clothes, which really was probably my most extreme moment. And, you know, I tell parents that if this is something that gives them peace and comfort, that's fine, but give yourself some boundaries because it can become very obsessive checking on these things. And so that's when I realized, you know, some of the things that Ryan had been doing, we really had a rubber meets the road conversation where I said, you know what, I need to parent from a place of strength instead of a place of fear. And by giving our kids some of these skills to prepare them for the world, we realize that they're so capable. And then we find that we become more comfortable giving them, you know, more autonomy. Because we can see what they're doing and it builds their confidence, but it also builds our comfort.
And Lenore, one of the main takeaways from reading Free Range Kids is that it's not about teaching kids necessarily to be more independent, although that's part of it, but helping parents better manage their fears, right?
You know, it's hard to manage fears. I'd say that the only thing that changes parents is exactly what Christina was just talking about right now, which is that once you see your kid be successful doing something on their own or getting up from having fallen and you didn't run over there and immediately, you know, apply the adorable Band-Aid and the ice pack and the EpiPen and this and that, it's the only thing that makes us feel confident is seeing our kids succeed at something without us. And we have a culture that is constantly telling us don't ever do that. I mean, the fact that Christina could buy a sock, an electronic sock for her healthy newborn and put it on them to measure, you know, the blood oxygen levels, which I hadn't heard of till COVID. I never even knew what a blood oxygen level was. And if you'd asked me, I would have said, I don't know, 1,005 or 2. I just didn't know what a level was. But that's an that's a company, and you know, we live in a capitalist society, I'm glad, but that's a company that's basically telling you your kid is in as much danger as a child that that thing was developed for, which is a child in the neonatal intensive care unit. And so you're being encouraged to take your healthy baby home and start treating them as if they're on the edge of life and death. And then by the time you're tracking them, that's as if they're on the edge of maybe coming home tonight or maybe being in somebody's trunk in the next 5 minutes. And so the idea that these give you more confidence and help you relax is a big lie, because they have to start out by making you so afraid of your child's viability that you buy these things. I mean, there are baby knee pads as if they're going to get hurt, you know, crawling. And there are baby walker things that are like, it turns your kid sort of into a marionette. It's a vest with strings attached. And it says it helps your baby walk more naturally. It's like more naturally than, I don't know, walking like millions of children have done, billions of children since the beginning of time. So there's a lot that's undermining our belief that our kids can do anything safely or successfully. And I think what both of our books do is show us that this is, it feels natural, but it's superimposed by a society out there that has a lot to gain from making us nervous all the time.
Okay, bless me, for I have sinned, and my last confession was the last time you were on our show, Lenore, but we had the baby knee pads for our firstborn. We got rid of them by the second.
Wait, so how many kids do you have?
Just two. Two. So.
Did you use it for the second one?
No, no. We got rid of them by the second one. They didn't even stay on for the firstborn. So
they're actually counterproductive. They don't allow, you know, they're imagine. Like, they're bulky. You know, they started getting the kids' way.
These were just funny. More like socks. They were a little thinner. But yeah, no, not necessary.
I do what like the one where it's that you put them on the baby and it's like little mops. And so when they're crawling. Right?
Cleaning the floor.
Yeah. It's like, okay, that you can get something out of. But just the baby knee pads, nah.
We need to take a break in a few minutes, but Lenore, what about this culture of fear? Why is it that, I mean, when I am, you know, now that I'm a parent, Christina's a parent, you're a parent, as opposed to when we were kids, mm-hmm. there was seemed to be less fear in the society at large. What do you attribute that to?
Oh, well, that's a lot of what the book is about. I mean, I'd say there's, you know, the media discovered that the greatest story ever told is of a white middle class or upper middle class child taken by a stranger. And so, you know, we'll go to the ends of the earth, even Portugal, to write that story. We're in a litigious society. You start getting into this mindset, like, is that legal? Is that going to be, you know, is the kid going to get hurt? If they hurt, is it my fault? Will I be sued? There's the marketplace we were just talking about. If you can convince Christina that her kid needs a, you know, a readout of every breath on an iPhone, then you can sell her not only the device, but better still, a $9.99 contract every month that she eventually forgets and just keeps doing until he's 21. And so, you know, and then there's the, I guess I'd call it the advice world. And when we come back, I'll tell you my favorite Parents Magazine advice. But I'll ask you this question before we go to the break, which is, Parents Magazine did a story, this is a couple of years ago already, about the 10 hidden dangers in your home. And can you guess what number one was?
I remember reading about this in the book, but I'm going to, so you can go ahead and say it.
All right, I'll say why. You can figure out, I'll say what it is and you can figure out why. It's the laundry hamper. Mm-hmm. Scary, scary. You guys were CIA agents. You know, the laundry hamper, obviously, it's an international scourge. It's after the, you know, Osama comes the laundry hamper. So you can figure out why.
Christina, do you want to take a guess at that?
You know, it's funny. The laundry hamper, we use the laundry hamper as all sorts of things in our home for imagination. It can be a car. It can be an airplane. We can turn it over and use it. So maybe we're doing it in all the unsafe ways. I don't know, but we have a lot of fun with the laundry hamper, making it pretend play.
Not anymore.
I thought you were going to say this was the risk of drowning in the toilet that you had talked about point in the book, which is extremely, extremely rare. All right. We need to take a break here. We're going to continue our conversation with Christina Hilsberg and Lenore Skenazy when we come back. This conversation was taped last summer, so we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. You can tweet us at 21st Show or leave a voicemail at 217-300-2121. And all those ways to contact us, it's all on our website, 21stshow.org. www.thepetcast.org. While you're there, why not also take a moment to subscribe to our podcast? You can also find us anywhere you get your podcasts. We're on Apple, Spotify, NPR One, Overcast. Just search for The 21st. All right, more to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. Welcome back to The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're going to continue our conversation with Christina Hillsburg, former CIA analyst and the author of Licensed to Parent, How My Career as a Spy Helped Me Raise Resourceful, Self-Sufficient Kids. We're also speaking with Lenore Skenazy, who wrote Free Range Kids, How Parents and Teachers Can Let Go and Let Grow. Christina, one of the things you and Ryan have worked on with your kids is this idea of avoiding danger and making sure that they're aware of their surroundings. Can you talk about what it means to get off the X?
That's right. We talk about get off the X in our book, and that is a concept that the CIA teaches its officers. And it's this idea that the X equals danger. It can be a person, a place, an environment. It's anything that your gut is telling you that, you know, danger's rearing its ugly head, get out of there. And so we train our kids to do what sometimes feels like the opposite. You know, sometimes as people, we want to move closer to something. We're curious. We want to see, oh, what is that commotion up ahead? Or in other situations where we freeze. And so we talk to our kids about this so that they understand that if they encounter a dangerous situation, they get more in tune to what it means to listen to their gut. They do things like visualize their escape route so that they know what they'll do in the event of an emergency so that they won't freeze. But we also talk to them about a couple important things like listening to alarms and warning signals. You know, we share the example of 90% of the evacuees from the World Trade Center on 9/11 delayed their departure, sometimes up to 30 minutes to do things like save their work, change their shoes. We want our kids to respond with a sense of urgency. You know, it can be calm. It doesn't need to be over, you know, over the top, like George Costanza running out and yelling fire and pushing over an elderly woman in the process. It doesn't need to be anything like that, but we want them to respond with a sense of urgency. And we also talk about this idea that I think is counterintuitive to a lot of parents and probably even teachers as well, which is it is sometimes okay to ignore authority figures. And the example we give for this is the 2014 Korean ferry boat disaster. You know, of those who perished, many of them were secondary school students. And the voice over the intercom was telling them to stay put. Okay. And it was the ones who didn't listen to that voice of authority who moved out of their room who actually survived. And so we want to talk to our kids about these dangerous situations because it's all about teaching them to think critically so that when they're in that situation, they understand that just because someone's an adult or a teacher, this is an emergency. I need to listen to my gut, remember what my parents have taught me, and think critically and move away from danger and not freeze.
How do you instill these ideas in children without freaking them out? I know that's something you're sensitive to in the book.
Yeah, you know, that's really important to us because this is not about being paranoid. Like I said, it's not about thinking that danger is lurking around every corner. It's about being prepared for sometimes worst case scenario. And that's how the CIA trains, knowing that whatever you encounter in real life is likely to be much easier. So we look for ways to use fun and adventure with our kids. And so one of the ways, you know, I tell this story in the book that there's this road that we would drive down regularly and there's a fork and it goes into a frontage road. And my husband would every time, and we would know, the kids would know it was coming. And so would I, but he would always get us and he'd say, "Oh no, guys, there's someone following us." And at the very last minute, he would veer to the right and he'd say, "Oh, we got away." We would use this and the kids would always cheer, "Hooray," you know, as if it's a new thing. He still does this to me, by the way, if we're on that road by ourselves, and he still somehow gets me every time. It's become this really fun thing. And it's just kind of another illustration. It's fun little things like this that we weave into our life. We actually advocate against having like a set emergency prep day or week for a family, because that makes it this big, scary, intimidating, serious thing that it doesn't need to be. If it's done organically in little fun examples throughout your children's life and childhood, they, you know, end up like our 18-year-old who's about to go off to college, who's been learning all these principles her whole life without even really realizing she was learning them. And they don't feel scary. They feel empowering.
Lenore, you have a chapter in your book titled Trust Strangers. What do you think about Christina's and Ryan's ideas about get off the X and preparing their kids to, you know, to face worst case scenarios?
Well, the idea that they're talking about is not to distrust everybody. They're basically saying get comfortable enough in the world that you can tell when something is a little off. And the advice that I give in my book for keeping kids safe is what the Boy Scouts teach kids, and my kids were Boy Scouts, and it's the three R's, which is that, you know, everybody's afraid of stranger danger, or there's somebody on the sex offense registry. These are not the big dangers for your kids. The big dangers for your kids are people that they know really well. That's generally, I see Christina nodding. We're here on the Zoom call together. And so what you teach your kids are the three R's are to recognize that no one can touch you where your bathing suit covers. And you can start with a kid as young as three, just like you can teach them to stop, drop, and roll without them thinking they're going to catch on fire every second. So recognize no one can touch you where your bathing suit covers. Resist if somebody's bothering you. You're allowed to kick, scream, run, you know, punch them, whatever you want. And then report if somebody wants you to keep a secret, forget it. You know, even if you feel weird about it or they threatened you or you're not supposed to tell, come and tell me and I won't be mad at you. Nothing bad will happen to you or our family if you tell. And so you're removing secrecy from the nefarious person's, you know, toolkit. And that's very empowering for your child. And it's going to keep them a lot safer than just saying, run and scream anytime somebody says, "Hi, little kid, I like your hat," or whatever. So I think we're actually on the same, because we're both rational people. We're both saying it's not that you should go out and distrust everyone. It's just spend enough time in the world that you have something to compare to, you know. Part of the reason I think we're so afraid and our kids are very anxious, you know, anxiety is sort of off the charts, is that we've been told not to make distinctions between something that is extremely safe and something that's unsafe. You're not allowed to let your kid wait in a car for 4 minutes while you pick up your dry cleaning because, you know, Christina is rolling her eyes and nodding vigorously.
So inconvenient.
So yeah. Inconvenient. Yeah. And it's ostensibly unsafe. Well, it's not unsafe, but if you're told that things are unsafe that are actually safe and your parents are saying you can't even play on the front lawn because that's not safe, you don't have a really good meter for where your X is. And so not where your EX is, where your X marks the spot is. And so kids need some independence and to encounter the world sometimes without you there so that they can develop what we used to call street smarts and what I think Christina would call the X factor.
Yeah. No, this is such a good, it's such a good point because I think the pandemic in a weird way has actually, that one thing you talked about, leaving the kids in the car, it's actually for the last year, it's been safer to leave the kids in the car while I run in to grab a gallon of milk or something like that. It really has sparked a change in just at least that one little aspect. So Christina, we just heard Lenore talking about recognize, resist, and report. You have another three-word rubric in your book, which is run, hide, and fight. And the idea is, you know, for kids, you say any CIA time a CIA officer would be pulling out a weapon, things have gone very wrong, and that is definitely a last resort. Can you talk about, you know, how you teach your kids to avoid in that level of escalation?
That's right. You know, I like to say that James Bond was actually a terrible spy, because shooting up a city or a car chase, an elaborate car chase scene, is the last thing you'd want to do when committing espionage, right? You want to be operating in the shadows. And so we mentioned run, hide, fight. That's actually something that's taught in the corporate world. You know, Ryan, my husband, is in corporate security now. And we bring that up as an example of, you know, we're talking about getting off the X. And of course, we include a chapter on defending yourself. But I want readers to understand that that is a last resort. We don't want our kids to be in a situation where they're having to defend themselves, right? But we want to talk about it so that they understand some concepts in the event that they do, in the unlikely event that they do, right? So your first option is to run, get away from danger. You know, you hear these stories about people like playing dead if they're in an emergency scenario. We don't want our kids doing that. We want them getting out. You know, getting off the X is the only thing that's taking them away from danger, because the longer you stay, the more likely it is that you'll be harmed. So when we talk about ways to defend themselves, we really are talking about realistic scenarios with our kids. We want them to understand the fragility of the human body, because I think that we see all these movies nowadays with these elaborate fight scenes, and our kids can easily get this, you know, self, you know, false sense of confidence that they could survive these like scenarios that are so unrealistic. So we make sure our kids understand that this is not a situation you want to be in. You know, one person cannot go up against multiple other people or someone two or three times their size. You know, so the first, you know, and best option is always to move away from danger. But again, you know, we're teaching these concepts in a way that is teaching our kids to be confident and self-sufficient, knowing that it's not a big scary world out there, but knowing that if they were to encounter something like this, they're ready and they know how to handle it. You know, one of the things I want to go back to when we were talking about, you know, this idea of fear and, you know, letting our kids play outside and things, there's also this whole concept of the messaging that we're inadvertently sending to our kids by being anxious and fearful, right? They can pick up on that. And I've noticed with my littles, they can read me very well and they then feel that energy. But what really got me is when I realized that my anxiety in those early years with my newborn and, you know, second newborn and then toddler, is that I was impacting their confidence. Right. So my son, you know, he was seeing that I was anxious. And when I didn't want him to do something, he thought it was because I didn't believe in him. And I thought he couldn't do it. Right. You know, I've written this essay about this experience at the park. Well, at this lake, you know, it's not really a traditional park, but a lake, that's what we do in the Northwest. You know, we go to parks with big boulders and we call it, or lakes with big boulders and call them parks. And he's wanting to climb this enormous boulder and I'm terrified. Right. And this is even after using all these principles. So like the anxiety and the fear doesn't go away. Right. These are tools we use. And so I tell him no, and he looks at me and I see the tears in his eyes and he says, "Mommy, I know I can do it." And it breaks my heart because I'm thinking, okay, I need to manage my anxiety and I need to also believe in him, because he thinks that because I'm afraid he's going to get hurt, that I think he can't do something. And so like Lenore and I have both said, you know, the more we give our kids these opportunities to go out and do things themselves and figure it out, they gain these skills and they gain the confidence. And so I think it's really important that we're mindful of how our approach can inadvertently affect them in negative ways if we're not careful.
So can I just jump in here?
Yeah, go
for
ahead.
A second? I think that's so true. I think it's so cool that you realize that you have to believe in him for him to see that you believe in him. So you had to let go. And I know how hard that is. And I have to give a plug for one idea that works that we have in schools. Everything we do is free. So it's not like it's a pricey thing. It's free. Is the Let Grow Project. And that's where a teacher gives all the kids in her school, or preferably a principal has all the teachers give all the kids in the school, a homework assignment to go home and do something new on your own without your parents. Obviously, you're a kid, you talk about it with your parents, but this is for K-8. So, you know, ages 5-12. And the kids and the parents discuss together, okay, I'm gonna climb the boulder, or I wanna go get my hair cut, or I'm gonna run an errand, or I'm gonna ride my bike to school. And once the parents decide on it, it is something new that they haven't let the kid do yet. But because everybody else in the class is doing it, you're not this crazy person, right? And the teacher wanted you to do it, so there must be something to it. And so you let the kid ride their bike, and the kid comes home and they're flushed and they're happy, or your kid climbs the boulder and he's at the top and you take a picture of him, you know, with his hands raised above his head like Rocky. And it changes you and it changes him. He sees that you trust him. You see that he can be trusted. And you, instead of thinking of them as this vulnerable little thing that's going to be broken or stolen, you start looking at like, look at my kid. Hey, he climbed the boulder. He ran an errand. She rode her bike. And the only thing that changes parents, the only thing that changes it from this total anxiety, no, my kid can't do it without getting hurt or killed, is seeing your kid do it. And the joy of watching them be successful is what rewires you and changes the relationship.
Absolutely.
Lenore, how do you deal with other parents? Because even if you as a parent, embraces these free range ideas, letting go, mm-hmm. You talk about kids who are brought home, who are out, going in a park and the police bring them home.
Yeah, well, there's a couple things. First of all, the Let Grow Project, because it's done at a school, generally there's suddenly all these kids out doing things on their own. We've heard of like a store that sold muffins and why was this child just walking in by himself? And they say, what are you doing here, kid? Where's your mom? And he said, I'm doing my Let Grow Project. And like, what's that? He explains. And then when other kids came in to get their muffins, it was suddenly normal. But one of the other things Let Grow has been working on, so Let Grow, L-E-T-G-R-O-W, is the nonprofit that grew out of Free Range Kids. We started it 4 years ago, and in 4 years, we've gotten three laws passed to the point where 38 million people are now living in a Let Grow state, Texas, Oklahoma, and Utah at the moment, which passed laws that say it's not neglect to take your eyes off your kid. Parents who give their kids some reasonable independence and are not putting them in obvious, immediate, and statistically likely danger cannot be accused of neglect. They cannot be investigated. And so even if somebody calls up and says, I see a child in a park, the CPS worker goes, oh, that's interesting. Are they running from someone? No. Are they in tatters? No. Are they, lost? No. Okay, well, thanks. Click. Because, if you want to be a good Samaritan, don't call CPS. Make sure that the kid knows where they're going, what they're doing. And that's doing something good. CPS does not, Child Protective Services and the government shouldn't get involved in these day-to-day parenting decisions.
Yeah. Just a couple of minutes left in our conversation. I want to ask you both to end. You both have sort of at the end of your books, meditations on perfection. Christina, you describe yourself as a perfection-oriented person, at least pre-parenthood. How do you teach your kids good is sometimes good enough?
Yeah, that's such an important principle in our home. And to be perfectly transparent with you, it is one I still battle with on the regular as a mom and as someone who grew up with these perfectionist tendencies, ended up at the CIA as an intelligence analyst, where it's very common to be a type A perfectionist. And, it's a very data-driven career as well. But it is important for us, for our kids, to learn this concept of good is good enough, because my husband and I saw it time and time again at the agency where people will be staying up late at night, on it. For the example I give in the book, it was an actual uncertainty and ambiguity exercise. I closed my computer and called it a night. And my colleague said, how are you done? And I said, well, you can stay here all night. There's no answer. That's the whole point of the exercise, right? So we would see these examples of people spending these late hours, and then the next day they wouldn't be successful in their training exercises because they were exhausted. So it's finding that balance. And so we emphasize this with our kids from a young age. And there are a couple different ways that we do that. And we talk to them a lot about perfection, and we want to model failure for them. We want them to know what it feels like and give them the space to fail. And everything that we've been talking about, this fear and anxiety, you can imagine how difficult it can be for some parents to let their kids fail. But this is one of the ways that the CIA trains as well. They expect people to fail because we learn from failure. And so we step back and we let our kids do that. But we also show them that we can try new things as an adult. We can fail. We model that for them. I talk about a story in the book where I'm learning to wake surf last summer behind the boat, and I just kept falling quite literally over and over and over again. But I want to show my kids that it's okay to try things even when we're not good at them. I learned from a young age to avoid things that I thought I might fail or that I wouldn't be the best at. We want our kids to know that they should try things. It's not you're either a rock star or you're a failure, right? You can be something in between. And really, such a big concept of our book is this idea of being well-rounded. And so by encouraging our kids to try lots of different things, they are becoming well-rounded so that they can make connections with other people. So we don't want them to be so afraid of failure and striving for perfection that they don't learn all these new hobbies and ways that they can be building relationships with others and become well-rounded people.
And we have to leave it there. Christina Hillsburg is the author of Licensed to Parent. Lenore Skenazy is the author of Free Range Kids. They're both really enjoyable books to read. Thank you both so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
More to come after a short break. Stay with us.